Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the February 2022 online Midwinter Home Education Conference.
I'd like to welcome everybody here. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being here. It's always a nice thing to be invited to any sort of conference or any sort of thing to kind of speak and to run through. Just a little bit about myself. My name is Paul Clegg. I currently work with a company called Lantech. We get to see some very amazing things. What we ended up doing is we created a thing called a stretch wrapper. So I work in the end of line packaging in the packaging world. I don't know if you guys have noticed how goods and services have changed while they're being purchased, but a lot more people are buying things online and shipping them in a box and shipping them to their homes. So that's what I do for work. I travel all over the world. Since COVID started, I've only traveled in the US and Canada. So it's kept me a little bit closer to home. I am the proud dad of 6 children. I take full credit for those. I've had very little to do, but and I'm joking on that. Samantha Clegg is my wife. She is absolutely amazing, and she just makes me happy every single day. Without her, I couldn't do any of this, and couldn't do much of what I do in my life. So, a few things that we were looking at when discussing this class, and I do want this to be more of an open forum. So if you do have questions, one of the things I would say is one, just straight unmute and either raise your hand or turn your video on, and then that way we can have that discussion kind of open and honest. And then or if you feel more comfortable, hit into the chat. I've got that up on one of my side screens, so I should be able to see some movement out of the corner of my eye and kind of look and react to that. So first, I wanted to get kind of a clip from who we have and what's going on here. One of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about today is what we do with stress. So this is the agenda. So over the next probably 40 minutes, me, like most sales reps, I cannot focus for about more than 40 minutes on any subject or topic. So I'm going to bounce around a little bit. We're going to go back and forth. But as you're looking, and as you may have noticed, if you've met me in person, I do like food. It's visible. I'm a big guy. But that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about stress. We're going to talk about tacos. We're going to talk about managing some expectations, the germination of seeds, and then knowing your next steps on hogs and fences. This is the same way that I will present in work. If you look at the agenda, you're looking at it probably wondering, what did I just get myself into and how is this all going to make sense? Hopefully it will all make sense. So let's start from the first one. I actually want to talk a little bit or just get from the group. This is going to be a little bit more of a participation. Can people tell me, or maybe one or two of you guys hop in and tell me about the stresses that you find in life? And I will call on people if there's no one there. Disciplining kids. Adeline, I absolutely love you. I think disciplining kids can be a huge stress. I see Amy hitting her stuff. Doing all things. Candace says all things. I think there can be stress in all things as well. That's one of those parts of life that does come at you quick, and every little thing can be added and put upon and make those stresses. Nicole actually says, overbook schedule. And overbooking can be an easy way to look at what we have for our own stress, right? When we start putting our own stresses out there and when we start putting our own stresses out there and we start having those things, that's kind of a self-inflicted stress wounds, right? Jennifer says, husband's career change. Having had having had a few career changes in my life and moving, Samantha and I have moved 13 times in our 17 years of marriage. And to put that into perspective, 13 times in 17 years, and the last 6 years we have been in Nashville. So you can do the math on that one. I know homeschool people are amazingly brilliant. So we moved a lot the first little bit of our marriage, and we had a lot of stress with that. Lisa says, taking time to care for myself so I can be my best self. Lisa, if you would, if you have in front of a microphone, I'd like you to ask to just explain a little bit on that one of taking self-care and if how you're finding stress in that. Because that's something I think important we need, or I want to spend just a tiny bit of time on, of finding stress when you're trying to take self-care.
Right now, my strategy is exercise. I love it, but finding the time to do it. So I work in the emergency room and I work night shift. And so my gym time is anywhere between 2 and 5 o'clock, which then trying to balance the rest of the day gets a little stressful.
So Lisa, I just want to say you're a saint for working graveyards. I worked graveyards the first 3 to 4 years of our marriage, and you become an absolute zombie, or at least I did. It definitely does change how you approach life and where you're at. So thank you for sharing that, Lisa. I see one from Amy that says, obviously stresses in my life includes technology. I think technology can be a huge stress of what we do and how we do and what we're running on. One of the things that I see when we cope with stress, I'll bring my book up so I can see this. One of the things I think we see is how much we're actually letting into our own lives. And what I mean by that is when we have stress, the vast majority comes into our lives via our own invitation. Sometimes there's stresses that we can affect. Sometimes there's stresses that we can't affect. One of the ways that I've found that helps me, and if there's anybody out there who has better or suggestions on that one, I also will see, you know, through. One of the things that was talked already about is working out. Obviously, this is a body made by McDonald's, not a body built by Gold's Gym. But one of the things that I see in my life is working out does help, having that physical relief. One of the other things that I do is I will actually make a list. If I could look around my office and show you, I carry and have a book on me at almost all times in my life. And one of the things that I do every morning, or probably 5 out of 7 mornings of the week, is I will make a list of the things I need to do that day. I'm a box checker. And when I make those box checks, I also include the stresses that I have. And I list my priorities of my boxes on how much I need to get done or their value that I need to have them done. And if I have things that I'm stressed about, a presentation coming up, LDSHE and this room right here, and then we'll also be presenting on the West Coast and also on the East Coast. That hits my stress bucket list every single day. And what I do is when I make those lists and I'm going through, I'll put a little box check next to it. But if there are things out of my control that I cannot control that day, I check it off that I've already done it and completed it, because I've already done and given it as much time as I want to. And I have already completed as much as I can about that task on that day. And what I mean by that is if I put on LDSHE presentation for the West Coast or for the East Coast, and I have that presentation there, I'm not going to be able to present that meeting today. I'm not going to be able to do anything about that. And so I check that off as something I've completed, because I've already taken and worried about that moment. So that's one of the ways that I handle and deal with stress kind of on the daily basis. So that's only one of the things I've done. I'd be interested to hear any other stress techniques that you guys may have. I know working out, like I said, is a big one. List making, that's how I end up working out and and making my list for it. Okay, so okay, next one. I'm going to move on to tacos. So this one, tacos kind of segues in, or at least stress will segue into tacos for me. Tacos are one of my stresses. Some of you may immediately be thinking, how are tacos stressful? And I was thinking about this last night as I was kind of finiting and running through of why tacos stress me out. And here are a few things that tacos stress me out on. So one of the things would be, what happens if a taco finally tastes bad? Tacos to this point in my life have never let me down. They've always tasted good. But what happens if a taco actually were to taste bad? Could I handle that in my life? Sometimes I think we look at things that go well, and they go well every time that we do things. It may be a simple act of getting kids ready for church or getting to a certain thing or having and doing another year of homeschool. We may be stressing out, but the index that we've had so far in our life is it's always worked. It's always presented itself, and it's always worked out to be amazing, yet we still stress out about it. So that's one of my things of what happens if a taco tastes bad. One of the other parts, though, too, is what happens if tacos just disappear? If in my life I wake up and things change so much that they're just gone. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I think oftentimes we do have things in our lives that we worry about them disappearing, about them going away, about them suddenly changing. And I think those become a point in our lives where when we have that fear of tacos disappearing, we actually are worrying about things that will most likely never happen. And so if we have things that will most likely never happen, like tacos disappearing, is that a real fear or is that a real stress that we want to invite into our lives? One of the other parts, though, too, is what happens, and one of my other stresses, what happens when a taco falls apart? Tacos are not the cleanest of foods. I eat them often with clients where I will be in a full business suit and we will stop at a taco truck and in the middle of nowhere, Houston, Texas, or we will be in Detroit and have a taco cart, New York, California. These are all things that have happened. And then in my best business dress and had a colleague with me. And that stress is when you're eating that taco, you go to take a bite and the whole thing just falls apart and it's everywhere. One of the things that I think can also relate from tacos into stress, and also that kind of underlying is, you know, that self-worth or that self-struggle, is tacos, when they fall apart, are still tacos. And at the end of the day, even when tacos fall apart, people still love them. And I think that's an important thing that we can present to ourselves of, if we're worrying about falling apart and trying to keep things together, we often have that part of, well, that person doesn't fall apart or that person doesn't fall apart. And we're comparing and contrasting ourselves with, you know, other people's tacos in their lives. You can only compare yourself to your own taco, and never once have I ever seen or had a taco fall apart and had that person be upset because their taco fell apart. It's a part of life. It's a part of eating tacos. And when things do fall apart, again, I think you can look at it in life of even tacos, when they fall apart, people still love them. And so that's one of the things of, that's where I wanted to talk about tacos. So the next one I had is expectations versus reality. One of the parts that we have, again, expectations, right? I might have the perfectly logical expectation that tacos will never be taken from this earth. I did have a question on expectations versus reality. I'm going to pose this out to the group, is do we sometimes have expectations that are not necessarily based in reality? Has anybody ever found that in their lives? Adeline says always. Anybody else? All right. Kara says, or Kara, Kara, sorry, I'm so horrible with that, says yes. Adeline, I'm going to pick on you because I'm hoping you have a microphone on. Adeline, tell me a little bit about when you've had an expectation that has failed or fallen flat.
Well, since this is a homeschool conference, that's a great example. I was going to put in the chat a little more detail, but usually we make a plan. I mean, this can apply to anything in life, but we'll make a plan. And then when we go to execute it, it doesn't quite work out the way we are thinking. And so it requires some tweaking and some shifting and whatever. Sometimes we have to throw the whole thing out and start over. But that happens everywhere in life. Even when you plan for a house, like you're going to build a house, like there's still tweaking that needs to take place because our brain isn't exactly reality. It's just like, I think we tend to be idealistic. So, okay. Yeah.
Kara, what do you think? Or Kara, I'm so sorry. Is it Kara or Kara? I'm going to let you speak and then yell at me for a little bit.
it's Kara. It's fine. I feel like as I've grown older, I've realized how many expectations I've had in relationships with various people, with friends or my children or my husband that were kind of unthought out. I didn't have a thought, oh, here's what I'm expecting. It was just latent, like to me, it was just a given. This is, you know, how it was going to work, what was going to happen. And those have been the only, I feel like the only times I ever struggle in those relationships are when the expectation and reality aren't meeting up very well, and letting go of the expectation and recognizing that it's an expectation. Like there's definitely things where, you know, with homeschooling, we didn't expect or all kinds of different physical things. But I find for me, the toughest ones are in relationships.
And I always find, again, tacos, right? Tacos have never let me down in my expectations. They're always good. But we just had a personal moment where we had a vacation a few weeks ago, and we decided that we would bump our normal standard vacation that we would normally take at the end of February or maybe the 1st of March, that we would bump that to the 1st of February, one to kind of celebrate my birthday, because my birthday was celebrating our 40th birthday. And we also had a timeline where my brother and his family could come out and join us. So we decided to, he's from Utah. They were coming out to, going to come out and see us. And we said, well, hey, change your plans, go to Florida. So we've always talked up our little place and we like to vacation in Pensacola, Florida. And it's this little pristine white beach. And there's, our little normal hotel that I travel for work at. It's right there. It's beautiful. So put a plug in for Pensacola, Florida. But this week, it was the big cold spell that came up and through all of Texas and Louisiana and into the panhandle of Florida. And we had expectations that we'd be able to swim. We brought our bodyboards, and we knew it was going to be chilly, but we didn't expect it to be cold. Our expectations were such of we were going to play in the ocean and have fun, and that's what life was going to be. And the reality was we spent about 3 days just in a hot tub, and we had everyone else at the hotel in their big down comforter coats just walking past us in the hot tub, looking at us like, you guys are absolutely insane. But some of what we can do with our expectations is just try to make the best of it. There is a talk radio host that I listen to frequently. And one of the things that he always says is the best expectation that you can set for a person is none. And that was his relationship advice that he would give to people in his congregation, to people that that listen to him on the radio and podcasting. And he would explain that on his expectations of what a wife should be. And he had this very early expectation in life. As he would watch his mother and his father's interactions, he would build his expectations of what he wanted his wife to be like and what he wanted to have in his life. And one of the expectations that he had revolved around his morning breakfast. So when in his home, his father was the stay-at-home parent and was a concert pianist and a concert violinist. And so his dad was home in the days and his mom was in the medical field. But every morning before she would go to work, they would wake the family up and they would have a family breakfast. And they were from upstate, I believe, actually they were in the West Coast in California. And every morning she would put two bagels or take a bagel and she would slice the bagel, put it in the toaster, and she would toast a bagel. And then when it would come out and it was piping hot, she would take butter and she would put it on the bagel and give it to his father. And so he in his mind said, that is what a wife does. And my parents are the pinnacle of what my expectations were. And so his expectations were that when they got married, his wife would butter his bagel. And then that was a dutiful job of a wife. And one of the things that when he got married and the first day that they had back from their honeymoon and they were back in their own apartment, they had a breakfast and he had bagels and sure enough, she cut a bagel for him and put it in the toaster. And he's thinking, this is great. This is exactly what it is. And when it popped up out of the toaster, he kind of sat there because she didn't get it and she didn't butter his bagel. And he looked at her and she looked at him confused as she's eating her breakfast. And he says, well, aren't you going to butter my bagel? And she said, oh yeah, that's not ever going to happen now. And he said, literally, it crushed him. He had that moment of his life where he looked at it and said, I can't believe that my wife is not going to do the things that I'm expecting her to do. But he actually at that point kind of had a self-reflection on what he was looking at and what he was looking for in his life. And his expectations were not based in reality because he never actually explained or never actually put that out to his wife of what his expectations were. And so he did. He said, well, I expect you to do this. And she said, again, yeah, that's never going to happen. She's like, I'll just tell you right now, that's not an expectation founded in reality. And so that was some of what he dealt with and kind of what he deals with and where he is kind of taking his group is, when you have expectations, you are setting yourself up for failure. And my family, we've talked about that of sporting events. You know, we had a son who recently just participated in a state archery shoot. He went to state. He's been shooting archery for a few years now, and his expectations were winning first place. This was his first state shoot. And he got up there and he shot his first three arrows in for a practice round, his second three arrows. He went to go shoot and he shot the first one. It went out fine. The second one, a piece of his bow broke and fell to the floor. And at that moment, he didn't move. He didn't look around. He just looked down at that broken piece of his bow. And he did not know what to do. It was his entire expectations at that moment were crushed because how can he place first if he cannot shoot his bow because that piece broke off of his bow? And so his expectations and his reality changed fairly quickly. And one of the ways that it changed fairly quickly is now he had to quickly repair a bow. Because as you are in those state competitions, there is a time factor with it. And if you do not meet your time slot, you do not shoot. You are just scored as a zero. And so he had to go get that fixed before the third practice round was through and his first shot was needing to be downrange and shooting. He ended up placing third overall. And he was still a little bit upset because the first about half of the competition, he was trying to figure out his new bow, because when it was fixed, it wasn't put specifically to where he had been practicing his entire time. And one of the things that helped him kind of cope through that was knowing and managing his expectations. So when that happened or when life happened, right? Adeline said, always, always you have expectations that don't necessarily meet up to life. And that was one of those moments where it was a proud parenting moment, because his ability to adjust to not having expectations at that point and said, you know what, it is what it is, and we're going to run with it and go with it. So I'm going to switch in, and now we're going to go from talking about stress and about talking about expectations to talking about something about seed germination or germination of seeds. And I know some people are going to be on the West Coast, some people are going to be on the East Coast. Living in the West Coast, one of the downfalls of the West Coast is I could never get anything to grow. We lived in Utah, we lived in Elko, Nevada, we lived in Las Vegas. I don't know if you're familiar with all of those, but all of those are technically desert areas. One of those is the high desert area, but getting things to grow was always a problem for us. And now we live in Nashville, Tennessee. And on the flip side now, it rains like crazy, and it's great. And it tends to just grow everything and anything. And much to my demise, every week I'm finding myself having to mow the grass, and then even once or twice during the winter. So can anybody out there, or if anybody would be willing to explain just a rough general basis of how a seed is germinated? Anybody? I mean, I will wait too.
Please repeat the question.
The question I had is, what, if any, or can anybody talk to me about how a seed is germinated? Just a rough overview, nothing super, super specific, but just a generalization of how does a seed get germinated, or how does that process work?
I'll give it a shot. So a seed needs moisture, it loses its seed coat, a root starts to grow, a shoot starts to grow.
That actually is absolutely perfect, right? So through moisture and through different factors, it loses that little seed pod that you see right there in this picture. You have, you know, you have the actual seed itself, and it goes from that little brown bean up into a beautiful green plant, right? Does anybody else refute that? So one of the things I did when I looked up and I looked at how seeds were available and how different seeds reacted with different areas, I got fascinated with this because it really came down to personal growth and looking into, and this is kind of where I wanted to bring this back into the actual title of this class is good enough, good enough. I wanted to see how different things grew. And as a homeschool family, we were talking about how different shelled animals actually will shed their shell when they grow to a point of uncomfortability. So they get uncomfortable and they shed that off, right? I know, has anybody ever used that with their children with how crabs grow, or, you know, any other exoskeleton animal, of, you know, when there's growth and there's a little bit of uncomfortability, you know, you grow and you shed that out. Has anybody ever used that, either by the raise of hand or running through? I'm assuming that's going to be a yes. Perfect. So one of the things that we've seen, we had that conversation in our home, but I looked at a seed and how a seed is a little bit different, where a seed will not start to grow until the external factors are there. Whereas a crab or an exoskeleton, it's continually growing and needs to shed its skin as it grows. I think a lot of the time I've heard the crab growth analogy used with people of, well, as you grow, you need to shed your skin and do something different. I'm going to propose here that I think humans are more like seeds than anything else. And just like all humans are like seeds, those seeds are different. Some seeds will actually need heat or will need fire to help them germinate and break their outer shell. Some will need pressure. Some need to be eaten and partially digested before they can actually germinate as part of that process. So one of the things I looked up, and I'm going to read this, it said the germination process is very simple. And once you know how to germinate a seed, it can become much less stressful. If this is your first time growing, you might just plant a seed in the ground and start watering it. While this can work, knowing how to germinate seeds makes a big difference. Simply put, germination is when a seed is exposed to moisture enough that it will crack it. So that cracking process can be done, again, through actual physical stress. It may need to be popped open first. It may need to just get enough moisture on it to where that dry seed ends up cracking. Or it may just need, like again, as I said, heat. All of those things lead to cracking that shell. I wanted to put that in relationship to some of the things that the, I would say, God in general teaches us through the Bible. And I myself, I am LDS. And so one of the things that I look to is the Book of Mormon as well. And this has kind of been about a year long journey with the seed germination and learning about one phrase that I heard at the LDSHE homeschool conference on the East Coast last year. It was during the graduation section ceremony. And I believe it was, I was hanging out with my kids and we were sitting up there as people were getting ready for graduation. And I believe it was Jessica Snyder's kids who just all of a sudden out of nowhere showed up with a bunch of cupcakes. And so we were sitting there eating cupcakes and there was this young woman, I don't think it was Jess's kids, but there was this young woman who she just started talking and she had this mannerism about herself and she would say, oh, do you want to know something? And I was like, absolutely. Do I want to know something? And she had two points that she made that have become kind of staples in our home. One was she used the phrase yeet and she started talking about Greek mythology and she went off on this long tangent. We listened to her for probably 5 to 10 minutes of her talking about Greek mythology and about which gods did what things. And this, she's like, and they yeeted a baby off of the cliff and everybody was like, they yeeted the baby. So that's become a staple in our home, that phrase, yeet, when you throw something. The other part that became a staple, though, is she goes, do you want to know something else? And we were like, absolutely, right now. And one of the things she said was, did you know that the straight and narrow is not straight? It's spelled wrong. And then she spelled it, and it's straightness, not necessarily the... The straight that she was talking about is not necessarily a straight meaning right through path, but the straight that she that is talked about in the scriptures is a straight as in a very narrow pass or a very perilous path. And that one kind of caught me off guard where it became this moment of levity of, you know, let's laughing about Greek mythology and someone throwing a baby off of a cliff to the very real scriptural doctrinal point of talking about a straight and narrow. And when we started talking about that straight and narrow, and throughout the week, we had been talking about different subjects and different topics. And one of those topics were stress. I started realizing that the straight and narrow path can mean different things, it meant completely different than I had done in my 39 years of life at that point. I had always understood the straight and narrow to be a very straightforward step on the path, get on the path, and then go. And I, as I started reading and searching and running through the Old Testament, New Testament, Book of Mormon, that straight took on a whole different meaning. In Deuteronomy, so Deuteronomy 28:53, it talks about straightness, and the straightness in Deuteronomy means distress. And so I started looking at my life on what things were placed into my life, and I started seeing that the Lord had actually started putting things into my life that were causing me stress. So it wasn't necessarily that I was growing out of my shell, that I wasn't getting to a point where it was easy and I was on a walking path and life was great. One of the things that I noticed is this straight and narrow path that it talks about. And it actually talks about it in the Book of Mormon with Lehi and his dream. That straight and narrow path becomes a uncovered path as you're walking. It's covered with fog and people are seeing and they're poking fun. They're making fun of, they're mocking. And it became one of those aha moments in my life to see how God was putting things in my life to do exactly that, of keep me on that straight and that narrow path. So I don't know if anybody has kept up with the shipping world that is happening, but about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, there was a ship passing through the straits, and this straits and the shipping line that we're getting through is a very, very narrow clearance for the bottom and also for both sides. And this container ship that was coming in, I believe from the Indian Ocean up and into through the Mediterranean, I believe that's where this was at, actually got stuck sideways. So they ended up hitting a piece of the bottom and their rudder ended up turning and they turned into both of the walls of this canal and this strait. And it took a few weeks for them to dig out enough to be able to back the ship up and to be able to get it through. And it ultimately ended up halting a lot of the global supply chain of where we were able to get our goods and some of our products. I actually had, personally, I had a few machines on that container ship that I had to delay for my customers about 2 months. And that was an 8 week delay in my world, and my business is a very huge delay. But I was starting to understand and look at those straits a little bit differently throughout my life. And by understanding it differently, it's changed my perspective of when I have stress, when I'm like a taco and when I fall apart. I now look at all of these things as I think our Heavenly Father would have us look at them. I see them as not necessarily oh no's, but oh yes's. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to hit today was, as we're having those stress moments, as things are falling apart, as one of our children is crying on the ground because, you know, their math book was, you know, the corner was bent on the page. Those are all moments where I take a look at it and say, you know, it could be worse. It could be completely a whole lot worse than this. And then I get to bigger stresses, right? I see those as little stresses. When I get to bigger stresses of maybe a project at work is going in the wrong way, or maybe a project that I needed to have for my welfare of my family ended up not happening, or it's not going to happen, or I lost the deal to a competitive company, or we've taken too much on, we've taken more into our lives than we can. And I start seeing some of those internal influences of, but I have to's, or I need to's, or people have expectations of me. And that's one of the ways that understanding the difference between a straight and narrow and a straight and narrow it really has changed the way I look at and handle my stresses. One of the things that I had talked to a stake president with, and just to kind of help manage, he's in the healthcare industry, and he says, it's okay to say no. And he brought it back to this straight and this narrow example. Is he said, in our lives, we're going to have moments where we are going to be on a path that is pretty straightforward. And in certain canals, the water will flow straight through. In other canals, the water will come and it will hug the left bank, or it'll come in and hug the right bank. And if you don't know how to navigate those waters, and you're with somebody who maybe is inexperienced or doesn't know you at all, you can run and then run aground just by heading straight. And he compared and contrasted this to when we have things in our lives that we've brought on or stresses that we're willfully participating in, that we need to make sure that as we are participating in those stresses and bringing those stresses into our lives, that we're also willing to say no. Because if we're letting somebody else take the rudder from our life or take the rudder of our life, they may hit a low point where they didn't know that was there, but you did. Nobody else is going to know where your canal or where your personal strait is, except you. That's not your spouse. That's not your children. That's not a church leader. That's not a business associate or a boss. At the end of the day, you have the power and the control of your rudder to say, absolutely not. And that keeps you safe and it helps keep you from being slammed into that little straight and narrow. That's some of what I think is taught throughout the scriptures. But it was also taught to me, and this is kind of one of my last and final things. One of the things that I saw in my lifetime and had the ability to experience is I grew up on a farm and we did not have feral hogs, right? The left picture is this sweet little piglet. And the right picture is this massive, you know, 400 pound, sometimes 600 pound, 800 pound feral hog. And in looking at this in my life, and I was talking to a group of youth about this, these are some of the things that I think we bring in onto ourselves, and not necessarily the hogs themselves, but I wanted to take a moment to kind of look and explain and show hopefully a connecting point. And if it doesn't connect, again, I'm sorry. And just remember, tacos fall apart and everybody likes those as well. So one of the things though from hogs is a hog is an actual very, very intelligent animal. It's becoming a very bad part of agriculture in the South and in the Southeast and even up through some of the middle states coming up and in. They like warm weather. And a hog, a single piglet, or actually not a single piglet, but a pair of piglets can breed exponentially over a year. And depending on the weather, they can have a litter quite often, which is meaning you go from having maybe two or four to having hundreds within a single calendar year. And so they're ravaging kind of where some farmland and some things are at. And one of the ways to combat this is the obviously of hunting and doing deprivation tags and permits. And they've actually become feral hogs have become such a nuisance in the South where most locations, you don't have to have a license. You don't have to have anything to hunt them. You just hunt them and shoot them. So one of the things that has been found though, is hogs become slowly adjusted. And if you try to change their environment, they will actually react very poorly to this and they get very skittish because they can see things happening. And one of the ways that I wanted to show that when we go and try to capture some hogs on a property that one of my friends has, they take a piece of fence and they will put a bait pile down to where those hogs will come in and they'll eat that food and they come back. And he'll do that for a little while and just put the bait out, just put food out, and they'll come and eat the food. And then he puts up one single piece of fence. And the hogs will actually avoid it for about a day, maybe 2 days. And then when that fence doesn't change, they'll come back to that bait pile and they'll start eating. Then at that point, he makes the second wall of the gate or of the fence. And so he starts pinning them in like an L. And then as that L is formed, they'll stay away for maybe a day, maybe a few hours, and then they come back that next night. And as they get used to that, and over a few weeks of processing, he will actually create an entire pig pen to where this entire pen and then the bait pile is right in the middle. And what these hogs will do is they will eventually make their way into the to the this pen, and they are completely feral, but they've seen that fence now for so long that they get used to seeing it. And I think that's when we in our lives start looking at the stresses or the bad things we put in our lives are like those little fences. You know, if they were all to be put in front of us, or a stressful situation and all the things we have in our lives. Again, somebody in the chat kind of said, everything is a stress in my life. And I think when we look at it from that perspective, if all those stresses hit at once, I think every one of us would be like, whoa, 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 no, that's too much. The example of a frog in water, if you turn it up slowly, they don't even notice that it's getting hot. Is the same thing with feral hogs. If you build that fence slowly, they never really notice. And I think sometimes we have the opportunity in life to bring on projects and to bring on our stresses that we don't realize how much stress we're putting on. And so I wanted to take just a brief moment to have everybody kind of step back a little bit and really think about that phrase, is good enough good enough? Have we built fences in our own lives, or have we turned up the heat on a pot where we don't really know where our good enough is good enough? And we're saying, yep, it's good enough. I can stop. One of the things that is taught in the scriptures, and I would take you to 1 Nephi 21, verse 20. There's a moment there, there's a verse in there that essentially mimics a phrase that Christ said of take this from me. And this is them talking again about the straight and the narrow, and that it's too hard and to take it from them. I think when we have those moments of, I just want to stop, or I want an easy path, or I've got too much on my plate, it's okay to ask and to say, no, I need to have these things removed. And I would challenge everybody that when you ask for those things to be removed, they may stop. They may be removed. You know, the family members, the church groups, the expectations, those can go away, and it's okay to ask and say, hey, I can't do these things. I need it to stop. But at the same point, I think we do have that example in the scriptures where Christ didn't stop and he didn't have that removed. That verse in Nephi where they're talking about that straight and trying to make it easy, or a place of compliance, or a place where they can get a little bit of reprieve, and it's denied. You have that moment of the Lord saying, I want you to grow, and I'm going to let you grow by putting some pressure and pushing on. And so there are those moments in your life where you're at, and it's good, and it's good enough. And it's happy. And just like that straight and that narrow path, you have that moment where that fog clears and you can take that next step. One of the things that we are trying in our family at this point is adding goals to our lives. And we're adding those goals, and we're setting those goals to really give us a little bit of clarity to that path. And I will tell you, some of the goals that were set in our family were pretty lofty. I had, again, one child who said, I want to shoot archery at the Olympics. That's a pretty far away goal when you're in your first year of archery shooting. But what was done is we can set expectations, right? We can also set next steps. And that's one of the things to focus on with any goal, is to focus on the next step. If you look at that goal so far and so wide away, that does begin to cause that stress and that little bit of chaos of, how do I get there? I can't do this. And it's getting beyond belief, worried about making that journey and making that path, where the scriptures talk also about that path being covered in fog. Sometimes we can't see. And so what's been provided is that straight and narrow, or that iron rod, right? That iron rod never really says that iron rod is not bent or doesn't follow the path, right? That iron rod does follow that straight and narrow path. Or I would propose that different definition of that distressful and narrow path. And if we're on that distressful and narrow path, if we're just looking at our next steps, what are our next steps? We can see examples where we focus on the goal so much that we get tripped up because we don't see what's right in front of us. And that's what I think we can focus on, or what I would propose to focus on, is as you are being stressed out, as you're thinking, am I good enough? Can these things really make a difference? Am I making a difference? That if you look at your next steps in that process of, can I justifiably make an effect on the things I'm stressed on today? And if that answer is no, check the box. You're good and you're done with that stress for the day. But if you can identify a next step of moving that needle forward or taking that next step, sometimes just like in the scriptures, that path is clear and we can see a little bit of that distressful and that narrow path, but sometimes it's covered with fog and we just have to trust that our foot is going to land on that path again. And if we have things in that barometer in our life, I can testify to you that that is where your foot is going to land at. And I can testify to that process, or at least add my testimony to that process of, if you're looking for those next steps, one of those things that happens when you're able to focus and just do those next steps and focus just on that next thing is that overwhelming thought of, if you're wondering, is my efforts or are my efforts good enough? I think that's the biggest part, is you are good enough. When you can remember and you're stressed and you're looking at it, think about germination of a seed. It can't grow without that external stress, right? As humans, we do not have exoskeletons. We're not going to grow and then shed our skin. What we are going to do, however, though, is have an external force put upon us, create pressure, create heat, create moisture, create cracking. And then at that point, we're going to realize that God cares enough for us to put that pressure on us and to make us good enough. So that is how I deal with stress and how I've adopted that little saying in my life of, I am good enough and my good enough is good enough. And I like the stress that the Lord puts on me so I can keep going. So I appreciate the time and I appreciate the attention and I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak at LDSHE. It always makes me happy. And at this point, Lisa, I'm gonna be done. If there's any questions, great. I'll hang out and also be in the breakouts.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.